This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Jim Sutter, CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance, Family Farming Legacies, American Manufacturing Jobs, and our national food security need strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with USEC's Jim Sutter next. American sugar beet and sugarcane farmers are keeping grocery store shelves stocked this holiday season with American-made sugar while supporting more than 151,000 jobs and contributing $23.3 billion in annual economic activity. Family Farming Legacies, American Manufacturing Jobs, and our national food security need strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Many of the headlines in 2025 have been filled with questions on whether China would return to the U.S. for soybean supplies and Brazil's continued growth in soybean production. Jim Sutter, CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, says Brazil's soybeans cost less than U.S. supplies, but in terms of quality, the U.S. product is a higher value. Sutter says that's the focal point of the USEC team moving forward into the new marketing gear.
So they understand the difference in value between U.S. and Brazilian beans. In terms of the protein side, crude protein is a measurement of the nitrogen level in the bean time multiplied times a factor, 6.25. And that's how you get crude protein. So it's not really measuring the amino acids, the actual nutrition factors inside the plant or inside the soybean, but it is measuring this, you know, sort of benchmark that we've used for 100 years, and it's very easy and it's what we all talk about, but it's not really all that accurate of a measurement. So feed companies, the people who produce chickens and hogs and animals worldwide, they look at things other than crude protein. So we do talk with people about the actual nutrition, the digestible amino acids that are present in U.S. soy, and that is better than what we find in Brazil. And same thing on the oil. There are quality characteristics through that heating process that they run their soybeans through. It has some negative impact on the ability of a refiner to remove free fatty acids and to remove color, and it costs a little more to refine oil from Brazil than it does from the United States. Now, they do have a higher oil content, which gives them an advantage, but it is an oil that is costs more money to be able to refine and actually slows refineries down as they put that oil through.
So a blunt question here, and not intended as marketing advice, but the Department of Agriculture is holding relatively firm on export sales and carryover stocks. Are we overstated?
Yeah, that is a good question and something I think a lot about. Our exports for the year that finished, the 24-25 year that finished either on August 31st or September 30th, we're just finally kind of getting all of that data pulled together. We ended up having a really strong year of exports. I think the third highest year ever at 68.7 million tons of exports. If you look at the whole complex of beans, meal, and oil. You know, as we're starting out this year, we're clearly starting out slowly. If you look at it in total, our exports to non-China destinations were strong last year and are continuing strong this year. And we are coming into the time of year when Brazil gets their crop harvested and brings it to market. And it's tough for the U.S. to compete at that particular point in time.
If we miss a turn, that leaves more supply in our bin. And Brazil has been selling all through this period of time to China with very few sales thus far. We've been catching up on data from the Department of Agriculture from the period of time that Washington was shut down. Jim, how much do you think they've purchased so far?
Well, we've been trying to keep a cuff of what we see in the flash sales, both to China, to unknown destinations. And we would think there are probably 7.5 million tons out of that 12 million ton commitment purchased at this point in time. It's a little difficult to tell, but that would be the number that we would kind of hang our hat on. And it seems like even this week, you know, we've seen 100,000 tons one day, a couple hundred the next day. So they continue to pick away at that. So I think they are making good faith efforts to make progress on that. Again, slower maybe than some people would want. But I think that the government of China does not, in my opinion, is very interested in building the relationship with the government of the U.S. And I think that's great that both want to do that. And I think for them to buy some soybeans in order to help make that happen, it's not a big deal for the overall betterment of the relationship between these two big countries.
Some of the farmers that raise soybeans in the northern plains are accustomed to seeing their crop move to the Pacific Northwest and to Asia. And in this drought of purchases, that market is very much dried up. What sort of a situation has this had on farmers in that region? And is there any hope in the near term that those supplies could move through their traditional channels? Or are they going to have to come south to the Gulf?
So if I pick North Dakota, for example, a few years ago, North Dakota didn't have any of their own domestic crushing capacity. They were totally dependent upon shipping soybeans across the top of the country to the PNW, where they would get exported to China. Now they've had two large soybean crushing plants built there, and I think that has had a definite improvement in the market opportunities for farmers. I've been kind of watching the basis levels there, and yes, maybe people would hope for a higher basis level, but I think that those crushing plants being there have helped the basis level remain relatively stable. And also, our organization and exporters have been doing a lot of work trying to get other destination buyers looking at the PNW. We hosted an event in early November, a PNW market opportunity, and brought in people from 14 different countries, both bean buyers and meal buyers, non-traditional PNW buyers, people from Bangladesh, people from Egypt, people from, you know, farther away than normally would be taking product out of the PNW, to give them a look at the great facilities that there are there, the quality of the crop. We had farmers there that were talking to them about how the crop's produced. There are some real advantages for products off the PNW. Now, we've got great soy from all export ranges, but we've been trying to help do some marketing there to help minimize the negative impact of the lack of Chinese sales this year.
If there's not another China in the globe, are there portions of the globe or are there specific countries that show potential to help bridge the gap from the lack of sales from our typical number one customer?
I would say, I would give you an emphatic yes to that question. And I think we are very fortunate in the soy industry to be in a growth industry. As people improve their economic situation around the world, they want to improve their diets. And there are people in numerous countries that are trying to do that. And let me just give a few examples, and I'm sure I will miss some. But Turkey is a market where they have really been growing their demand imports for U.S. soy. Vietnam continues to grow. Over the last 20 years, the growth there has been amazing. Egypt, I think you and I have spoken before about Egypt, is a place where 10 years ago they were hardly importing. Today they're a 3+ million ton market with a real strong preference for U.S. soy. Latin America, Colombia continues to grow. Mexico continues to grow. So there are a lot of destinations around the world. I could just go on and on. But we can't forget that China is the biggest importer in the world. They take almost 60% of the soy that comes from anyone, from all the destinations, all the origin and goes to one destination. They are that big international buyer. And so if we don't have a piece of that market, it's really hard, or it's difficult to make it all work to go to only the other destinations. So that's why I'm quite happy if we have this slice of Chinese demand that our president's talked about, and then we have all of the growth in the other markets. I think that is really a great diversification strategy for U.S. farmers and a good way to have a broad market to protect us against downturns in the future.
Jim, we are told, farmers are told, that the efforts that the United Soybean Board has made in the way that we are raising our crop, the way that we are using the new phrase regenerative agriculture or sustainable agriculture practices, that the way that we raise our crop is gaining us an advantage in the globe. Is it really, and is that an advantage that will lead to additional sales if the globe is truly concerned about climate?
Yes, it is. We are seeing, and we see this in many countries, there is desire, especially from younger generation consumers, to buy products for their families, to buy food products that were not, that didn't cause damage to the environment as those products were made. And soy is something that people tend to look closely at as they do that. So we know that people value U.S. soy because it is non-deforested. It hasn't, it has the lowest carbon footprint of any soy produced in the world. So people notice that. We have, the U.S. Soy Sustainability Assurance Protocol, or SSAP, which, buyers around the world can request from sellers as a way to verify the sustainability of the production. And, 75% or over that of our total shipments that go out of the country carry one of those verification certificates with them. And now companies have the opportunity to use a logo on their products. And in 21 countries, we have 1,100 plus products now using that sustainable U.S. soy or fed with sustainable U.S. soy logo on their products. And that just grows every week. We see more people around the world signing up on that. And people would not do that if they didn't believe that it had an advantage for them as they were marketing their products. So I tell you all that as background for, yes, I believe that the way our U.S. farmers grow their crops very sustainably, not going out and converting other land into farms, using minimum till farming, minimizing the amount of fertilizer that they put on the crops and the amount of other inputs that they have, all of that contributes to the great low carbon footprint and the sustainability of U.S. soy, which is an advantage.
You use the F word, and that's forestry. The EU's deforestation plan and the demands under that plan. The rules apparently are being delayed, but when they finally come into effect, will the U.S. soybean farmer be able to meet their standard and still sell into those EU nations?
We believe so. They're still setting the rules, so we have to see exactly how they shake out, because they're, you know, everything's complicated. But we believe that it should give U.S. soy a competitive advantage versus other origins, particularly in South America. It will be much, because we have such a much lower deforestation rate in this country, minuscule deforestation has taken place in the last few years versus what's happening in other places. It should really give us an advantage. Honestly, we were disappointed. Our organization has worked very closely with exporters, with farmer groups, together with USB and of course ASA and all of the groups to try and make sure we had a plan so the U.S. industry would be able to supply the EU as they implemented EUDR. Again, they're delaying. But one of the things we're thinking about, because remember I said consumers are asking for this, regardless of whether there's EUDR or not. We hear some European countries saying, hey, we still want deforestation-free products to go in through our supermarkets or to be used as we feed our chickens. So we're thinking about how do we make sure that the U.S. can meet those requirements even without an EUDR. So, yes, I believe U.S. farmers can have the opportunity to market into the EU, and it will give us a competitive advantage if and when they ever implement it.
Thanks to inflation, farmer production cost in the U.S. higher than probably they've ever been, and Washington is certainly looking into that measure. But approaching the new crop year, farmers now are seeing returns that are either at or below the cost of production. Now, one of the stories that they have been told and are hanging hopes on is demand for biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel. Jim, if these fuels come to bear with the support of regulations from Washington, and if the industry develops this sustainable aviation fuel market, does this change the way the Soybean Export Council approaches global marketing? And will we have less raw beans to sell?
Yeah, that is a really good question and something we've been looking at over the last few years. And we've seen the crush ramping up, and as more oil goes into biofuels here in the United States, it means that more meal is produced. And some of that meal is used domestically, but roughly 2/3 of the additional meal production that we're seeing over previous years is ending up in the international markets. And this year, for example, the last marketing year, for example, we set a new record for soybean meal exports at 16.5 million tons, and that was up 14% versus the previous year's record. So, yes, we are seeing an increase in the percentage of the soy exports that go out to the world, kind of the soy complex, as we call it, beans, meal, and oil. There's a slight shift with more of that becoming meal and a little bit less of it becoming beans. Actually, what we see going forward, and it's all subject to, you know, what happens in terms of acres and yields and all of that, but we forecast in the way we look at it that beans will stay about where they are or go up a little bit in terms of exports going forward, and meal exports will continue to grow, getting up to probably 22, 23 million tons of exports by the time we get into 2032 or 2033, something like that. So we'll see meal grow in terms of the percent of our total exports, but our total exports still remain a very important component of the U.S. soy crop. At 55 to 60% of the crop gets exported.
Does that put us in greater competition with Argentina than Brazil because of their ability to process the bean?
Well, you know, Argentina, as you're alluding, mainly exports meal and oil because of the differential export taxes that they have. So yes, it will put us a little more in competition with Argentina and a little less with Brazil, who tends to export more of the whole beans. But we continue to believe, and I know I have a lot of discussions with people about this, we see markets around the world where they like to import meal. You know, you think of a country like Indonesia, which is the world's biggest palm oil producer. They got plenty of veg oil, so they don't need to bring in beans to crush, but they need meal to feed their large livestock industry. They produce a lot of chickens and some aquaculture there, so they're a big meal importer. Historically, we haven't had enough meal to reach all the way to Indonesia. So we think that's a market that has good growth potential for U.S. meal. So as we have more meal available, we'll be able to reach into some of these further away markets. And if there's strong oil demand in the U.S. because of the biofuels, that should give our crushers, you know, they'll have reasonably good margins so they can pay good prices for soybeans. And they will be able to compete in the global market as they sell their meal.
Jim, I'm asking you from an educational standpoint and from where you sit looking at selling our product globally. What are the headwinds that are preventing us from seeing the success that perhaps we deserve?
If I think about the success we deserve, I think all of our farmers would like to see prices being a little higher. You know, prices have come up after the announcements about China, but they didn't come up as much as farmers would like. And I think we continue to see heavy competition from South America. And so I think the headwind we have is those competitive pressures. And, I believe that U.S. farmers can effectively compete with anybody as long as we are competing in a fair way. And if people are really properly valuing the way that our U.S. soybeans can be used and the economic value that they can deliver to buyers. So I think we just have to be marketing that value. We need to be, you know, we've had a little bit of a disadvantage over the last few years where China has really been given an incentive to be helping Brazil improve their infrastructure and improve their ability to get beans to the market. That hasn't helped us. You know, in the last 5 years, we've seen Brazil's crop grow pretty significantly, And we haven't seen the U.S. crop change very much in terms of size. And that, it says to me that those Brazilians at the moment have an advantage. I think they're going to have to slow down with their growth. I think people are going to be noticing more and more about the quality issues they have there, and they're going to be wanting to favor U.S. soy. So the job that USEC does with differentiating and elevating a preference for U.S. soy is more important than ever as people look at the value, and we try and differentiate and get more demand for U.S. soy to help our farmers and our industry.
You're coming off of a USEC board meeting earlier in December. What was discussed? What were your strengths, opportunities, weaknesses? What were the things that your board members talked about and that you will be concentrating on heavily in 26 and beyond?
Well, I think one of those things is continue to work with China, because China is important, but let's keep a focus on diversification. Let's make sure we're trying to open up other markets and work in other markets, whether those be our long-term mature markets, we don't want to lose those, but also new markets. Syria, we've just started doing some work in with all the changes that are taking place there. Algeria, a place that is relatively new to U.S. soy demand, and many others I could list. But really, our board was giving us kind of the direction, keep focusing on all of these various markets. Don't give up on China. We need a share of that. But let's diversify and do that. And then this bit about really helping to educate people about the value of U.S. soy and how it's different than other soy. We are working on a new project, I'll call it, kind of a we've known for a long time about how crude protein was this old measure, and there's better ways to evaluate the real nutrition value of soybean meal made from U.S. soybeans, whether crushed here in the U.S. or somewhere else. But we're looking at a new way to identify that. And we're calling this project the Gold Standard Project, the Gold Standard. So we want to develop a new way to kind of replace or at least supplement the old standby crude protein measurement to better help people understand their true value. So that's something our board is very excited about and really encouraging us to take a look at. I guess one other thing we talked briefly about in our board meeting, which was kind of new for us, and I think we got the direction that I would expect from our board, but it's always good to kind of hear that. In the case of soy, we haven't looked very much about international markets for biodiesel or renewable diesel. And we talked with our board about that. We did some research. We looked at opportunities around the world. And it's not going to become a major focus for it, but we're going to look a little more at that, because there are some markets, Japan's talking about utilizing 3% SAF in all of the aviation fuel they use in 2030. That's not very far away. And that's a big number if they would use that 3%. Is there an opportunity for some U.S. produced product to go there? Maybe. We've got to learn more about that. So we're gonna just kind of open our eyes a little more looking at that. We haven't done very much of that in the past, and it's still not gonna be a major focus for us, because most biofuels will be used right here in the U.S. But we're gonna look a little more at that. So there's a pretty good mix of what our board is directing us to do.
Well, Jim Sutter, as the CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, you and your board members and officers, the tip of the spear in opening doors and maintaining opportunities for U.S. soy globally. Thank you for taking time here during the holiday season to spend with us and talk about strengths and opportunities. This is Open Mic. Jim, you get the last word today.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for what you do in helping us get the word out about all the things that we're doing. And Merry Christmas to you and your family and that of all the listeners. I guess I'd just like to try and leave people with, while we're struggling in terms of, maybe profitability and some of these other issues that are really, really important, I do think we have to be somewhat confident in the future. The future, I believe, for soy, because global demand continues to grow, I think that should give us confidence that there is a place for our U.S. soy to capture a good share of that. And the work we do together with USDA's Foreign Ag Service, with USB, with ASA, with all of the states, all the farmers that support us, it really is a team effort. And I think if we all work together successfully as a team, we will be successful in making sure that this remains a great industry for U.S. farmers and that the future is bright. So thank you.
Our thanks to Jim Sutter, CEO of the U.S. Soybean Export Council, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by the American Sugar Alliance, family farming legacies, American manufacturing jobs, and our national food security needs strong farm and trade policies. Learn more at sugaralliance.org. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.